Whether you've been at this for 10 years or 10 minutes, there's always more to learn within the craft. Today we're tackling questions from newbies and veterans alike, those questions you've always wondered about, couldn't find straight answers for, or have been too afraid to ask. What are your burning witchcraft questions? Welcome to 2 by Torchlight, where we dive deep and get real about magic and witchcraft, its relationship to science and pop culture, and what it's really like to build a modern practice that's accessible, effective, and unique to you. I'm Aradia, your veteran witch.
And I'm Liz, a newer practitioner. Hang out with us round the torchlight as we talk all things woo and witchcraft. So we've sourced some questions from witches in our social media circles, personal circles, and we're going to be answering some of those questions today. Anything we don't get to that was submitted, we'll be getting back to on our social channels, which we'll talk about more at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we feel like it's important to address what's most important to practicing witches right now.
Right.
Instead of just picking a single topic and going from there. So with that, Liz, what got you into witchcraft? What got you to start practicing?
So I've been interested in witchcraft since I was younger, teenage years. I feel like a lot of girls especially, or anybody that was raised female, kind of finds the path at one point or another. And at first it was more about like, here's a tribe that I can belong to. Here's something that lets me kind of find my own way, especially because I was raised going to church every Sunday and like all of that stuff. And then, you know, obviously I kind of fell out of it as, you know, college happened and life happened. And then especially recently, I met this awesome badass witch who lived their life very openly.
Oh, man, they're okay.
And it really inspired me because, like, it was always in the back of my mind for so long. And it really inspired me to be like, no, like, everything that I was kind of considering and everything that I've kind of always thought about in the last couple of years, it is, like, something that you can live openly and freely and, like, actually practice. Because it always felt kind of like, I don't know if it was imposter syndrome or what, but it always felt kind of like I was just, like, playing at. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's how I'm getting back into it now.
That's awesome.
I
have pretty much the complete opposite story.
Okay.
Right? Where it's a very common story. People come to witchcraft because they're coming out of organized religion, right? And they want something that is different, that is sort of breaking the mold of something that was imposed upon them growing up. I didn't grow up in a church. I didn't grow up with a religion. Like, both of my parents had to do that when they were kids. So when I was born, they were like, man, F organized religion, we're just gonna be people, right?
Yeah.
So when I found witchcraft, it was actually through a school project where I had to do some research into like pre-Christian beliefs and stuff. And that sort of led me to stumble upon the fact that people still believe and practice that kind of stuff today. And I was like, what? What is this? What is this weird magic that is like real and not just in my fantasy books? Because like prayer is just another form of magic, but it's not anything I grew up with. So like the entire world of religion and spirituality was new and shiny and sparkly to me. And yeah, I dived deep into it because I'm a super nerd, right? And it just kind of stuck and I've been doing it ever since.
And for podcast's sake, Aradia and I both get very excited talking about these topics, so I'm sure we're going to stumble over each other a couple times. It's gonna happen.
Oh, yeah. It's fine.
So what about practicing is most interesting to you, then? You know, you've been practicing so long, not to age you.
I'm just gonna start digging my grave right now. What's most interesting? I think it's kind of like the alchemy of it. Like, it's almost casting a spell, and especially building a spell if you're writing it yourself, or like building ritual, is like bringing together all of these different puzzle pieces that you're sort of like slotting into the right places to get the right effect, right? You could pick up a stone and that stone can have like 15 different intentions assigned to it, right? Or maybe you're looking for an herb for a specific intention and there's a handful of herbs that will apply to that intention. And part of the magic to me of spellcraft and witchcraft and building practice like this is figuring out what pieces work well together and what's going to give me the most desired effect. And how, you know, three spells with the same intention and outcome can look very differently between three different practitioners. And I think that, like I said, alchemy part of it, the exploration and the building is just really interesting and sort of developing my own personal gnosis over time.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I definitely think a lot of it is just the fact that I have so much to learn. So, like, I'm sure that my most interesting thing is going to change, like, again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
But especially for the last year, I have really been deep diving into tarot. It's something even from, you know, teenage years, that was always something that really struck me, was like the art and how beautiful it was. Mm-hmm. And even the history behind it, the fact that like it used to be just a regular deck of playing cards, right? And stuff like that. And what I've kind of realized through all of this tarot work is it's not just the tarot that interests me. It's the intuition that is linked to it.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting into intuition work. And, like, that's really got its hold on me right now.
Psychic development. Yeah. yeah. Which is so much fun to talk about. But why don't we get into some of our other submitted questions?
Yeah.
So, Liz, do you make up your own spells or do you use the spells of others?
See, I feel like I'm so new that this isn't a good question for me. Because what I do now is, it's a lot of, like, Googling and looking up, and like I have a roommate who worked at Barnes and Noble, so I would get all these books for like huge discounts. So I mostly have worked with like spells that other people have written out, but especially like when I can, if I can substitute something that makes more sense to me or add something on as like a piece of something that I've done before that really felt good, mm-hmm. I like to order from the menu and then customize.
That's perfect. I love it. But that's exactly where basically everybody starts, right? Because when you start with witchcraft, it is absolutely okay to use spells that other people have written. And honestly, I've been doing this for over 20 years and I still will pull out a spell that somebody else has written because it's done and it's easy and I'm lazy. So it's absolutely okay to use spells that other people have written. That being said, you're gonna get the biggest bang for your buck if you put the contents together yourself, mm-hmm. because you're really customizing the outcome and you are mindfully choosing all of the components that go into the spell based on your intention. So every step along the way of crafting that spell, from conception to actual casting and then after the fact, is basically infused with your desired outcome, right? So you definitely get the best bang for your buck when you write it yourself. But that doesn't mean that using spells from other people are not effective or is looked down upon. Like, I would never shame anybody for, like, pulling a spell out of a book. One of my favorite witchcraft authors is Judith Giles, and she has this big book. It's called the Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells. And it's not just spells. It has other stuff in it, and I adore this book. But if I will often just pull spells out of that book if I need to work with something, mm-hmm. and I don't have the time or the resources to sit down and like spend days crafting it myself.
Right. And I will say one of the most effective things I've ever made was Samhain. Last year, you ran that workshop that we all did over Zoom. You sent us supplies.
Right.
And you were teaching us how to make like incense with the, why can't I think of the word right now? The drip drop.
Essential oils.
Thank you. So yeah, you sent us the loose incense and the herbs with the essential oils.
Yep.
And I ended up making, again, going back to tarot, I ended up making an incense that I can burn when I'm reading.
Perfect.
And it has blown my mind how it, like, my readings change when I use it.
Yeah,
like,
because you're tapping into your intuition when you're putting the blend together and you're really putting your energy into it. And that's all witchcraft and spell work is putting your energy into something to get something back.
And I did the number one no-no, and I did not write down what I did.
Oh, yeah. You'll listen, I still don't. I have duct tape on all of my mason jars to remember to write down what's in the jar,
mm-hmm.
because if not, I won't, and I won't be able to recreate that amazing tincture or flower essence I made, and then I'll kick myself later on. So, next question.
Yes. Where does the term, because I'm going to ask this one because I do not know the answer to this one, where does the term witch actually originate?
All right, so...
We're getting situated here.
Rolling up my sleeves here. So a lot of people are probably not going to like the answer to this, and that's too bad. We don't really definitely know where the term witch comes from. What I can say with absolute certainty is that the way we use the term now and the image that we have of a person who uses that term is not the same as the way it was used 100 years ago. And people who would be using that term are not the same as people who would be using it now. It's the origin of the word, like the earliest etymology we can find of it is from Old English. And I cannot pronounce, not even going to try. But basically the term witch is derived from this Old English word, right? And it sort of developed as English developed. And there are other instances of very similar words being used in like the Dutch language, for example, to describe people who did practices that we would commonly attribute with witchcraft nowadays, like dowsing and astrology and stuff, had this sort of same root word that sounded very much like witch. And nowadays we just sort of attribute the word witch to it. The thing is, a lot of people have this romantic version of a witch, which is like this pagan outsider who lived in the woods and like
naked around the bonfire. And
like, but like the Christians would go to them, but it would be very hush hush, and they were like the outcast of society, and we look back on this sort of creation very fondly, and that's absolutely not the way it was. Like, history does not give us this person. More often than not, when you look at people in history using the term witch, it was used very differently than we use it now. Witch was a creation of Christian belief, right? Witches were people who associated with the devil, but then you also had herbalists and folk healers and people who read tea leaves on the side, and none of that was witchcraft. All of that was normal. Witch is associated with the devil. Mm-hmm. So the term has really evolved over time into what it is now, but we can't really look back and attribute it to the way people used it back then. Like, right. it was bad to be a witch back then because the definition of what a witch was different than what it is now.
Yeah. And a lot of this, and I'm hearing, you know, you're constantly hearing her, she, when it comes to witches.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously witchcraft and, you know, practicing and stuff like that is not gender specific, obviously. So one of the other questions that we got is, how can a male closet witch find their tribe? Because I'm sure there's a lot of, like, stigma in their own brains and elsewhere to and kind of just, buy
like,
that.
My heart aches for the people who, regardless of gender, who feel like they can't find people. You know, anybody who has to live in the broom closet, I just feel so sad for. It's a real term.
I know, I'm sorry, though. Living in the broom closet. It tickles me every time. As somebody who just got accused of coming out of the closet recently, that just that tickles me.
But okay, so the question is, how does a male closeted witch find their tribe? And I think the answer really depends on where you live, where you are, and also how deep in the closet you are. Like, can you not even walk into a crystal shop? Can you not even follow witchy Instagram accounts? Like, how deep into the closet are you, right?
All I can picture is, what was her name? Helga Patinsky from Hey Arnold with the shrine in her closet.
Oh, no. Babies.
Anyway, sorry. Continue.
But so if you aren't, most commonly it's you're not out to your family, right? And you don't want your family to find out that you're practicing witchcraft, which, honey, I've been there. But the easiest way, honestly, is to use social media, especially if you're in an area where you don't have metaphysical stores or can't go into the metaphysical stores because people might see you and it gets back to the people that you don't want to know. And plus on social media, certain social media platforms, you can maintain some level of anonymity. So if you really need to protect your identity, things like Instagram, you don't have to have it linked to Facebook. You don't have to have your real name on there.
All it takes is a spoof email and a fake name.
Exactly. And you can, you know, follow different witchy accounts. You can find different witchy groups by using local hashtags. Meetup.com is still a thing. Once upon a time, there was a website called Witchvox, which is dating me, but that's okay. Witchvox was wonderful for finding local practitioners. And sadly, RIP Witchvox, it is not around anymore. But Facebook groups still are, if you can use Facebook. And honestly, I think one of my favorite methods is if you have a local Unitarian Universalist church, a lot of them are very pagan-centric. Being pagan is not a prerequisite to go to a UU church. They're very, like, welcoming of all beliefs and spiritualities, which is, like, the whole thing of being a UU practitioner. So you can go there and just be like, I'm just looking for meaning and spirituality in my life. So I'm going to attend Sunday service at my local Unitarian church. And, oh, what's this? You have a flyer posted for a local Samhain ritual? Oh, I wonder what that's all about. And sort of, like, you will find your tribe in these places without having to, like, be waving your incense and magic wand from the rooftops, you know?
Though it can never hurt.
Yeah, it'll never hurt. But if you can't.
Right, true.
If you have a local Unitarian church, they're a great resource. And you can, like, subtly ask somebody, hey, do you know of any circles? Or using code words like, hey, where's the local crystal shop? You know?
Getting into the, do you listen to Girl in Red?
Right. So there are definitely ways to sort of fly under the radar. And all of these practices like crystals and tarot, they're not intrinsic to witchcraft. They're witchcraft adjacent. But starting with these sort of like periphery practices and then sort of weaseling your way in. And then all of a sudden you, you know, have pentacles tattooed on your fingers and are wearing witch hats and dancing naked.
Don't diss the witch hat. No. The witch hat is comfy and warm.
I know. So you can definitely ease your way into it by looking for periphery communities and utilizing social media.
Yeah.
And the anonymity that comes with that.
And I know, I feel like a good, and correct me if I'm projecting, I feel like a lot of this is based around that, like, gender idea and, like, and any witch that I know, and granted, I don't know a lot of them yet, but any witch I know or that I've interacted with on social media, I don't think they would ever even bat an eye at a male practitioner coming up to them and joining the group and asking questions and talking about their experience. So I don't, it's not as big of a deal as sometimes it feels.
The gender thing is absolutely not that big of a deal. Like, at the shop where I work, a lot of the female identifying will come in and look for crystals and look for sage bundles. And then the male identifying will come in and be like, yo, what's the weirdest occult item you have? And I have to flounder because we're just a generic spiritual shop. I'm like, yeah, you know, behind the curtain in the back room. Yeah. But like, it's pretty evenly split. And actually some of the male identifying practitioners will be more open about the fact that, hey, I'm looking for a witchcraft group. Do you have any here? Whereas the girls will be like, oh, I just want my rose quartz. Mm-hmm. And then also, do you do anything for the full moon? Like, there are so many different ways to come at it. But a true practitioner is not going to blink an eye about your gender at all. And if they are, you don't want to practice with them anyway.
If they do, that's not any energy that you need.
If you're specifically looking for, like, a male-oriented group or, like, only men to work with, that might be a little bit harder because most groups are co-ed. I know they exist, though. Like, up here near where we are, we have the Temple of Witchcraft, mm-hmm. which has, you know, smaller temples within the organization for just female-identifying and just male-identifying. And they have, like, a queer circle. So you can sometimes find stuff like that, but it's definitely harder. In general, you'll find co-ed groups that will be welcoming of everybody.
And the queer circles are absolutely circles because we can't do anything straight. So,
moving on.
Moving on. So one of the questions that I actually really liked is, how do I find resources for ancestral cultural practices? And the original poster mentioned Slavic practice specifically, which I like because my ancestry is very heavily Irish and Slavic, more Swedish than Slavic, but we're in that same area. And I know we're going to be doing a full episode on, like, how to do research and find good sources.
Yeah.
But, like, when you're looking for something cultural specific, is there, like, a starting point that you can kind of point to?
I always tell people the first thing you want to do if you're looking for cultural practice, like, to build something based on your ancestry, is to go read the history of the location. Go read especially, like, the folklore and mythology. Like, the perfect example, honestly, is if you're getting into Norse paganism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't have clear documentation of the way Norse pagans, and I'm saying this with air quotes, practiced, right? Because basically everything we have written down from Norse, Swedish, Scandinavian, Viking era was written by the Christians after the fact. So the best place to find information about the way these people actually practiced is from reading, like, the Eddas. And then from there, you sort of have to do a little extrapolation and go, okay, well, this is how they talk about Thor, right? So if I want to start worshiping Thor, I'm going to pull things from these Eddas, these folklore and stories that these actual people had and still have, and build my practice around that. Folklore is rich and super in-depth and detailed when it comes to, like, actual belief of an area, because that's where folklore comes from. Like, these people believe these certain things, and most folklore you can really break down and figure out, like, how the belief came about, or, like, where this folklore or this myth started, and use that as a basis for building up your ancestral practice. And then also, like, talking to family, if you have access to family, or talking to just other people who are currently living in the culture now. Sometimes they can bring to light things that you maybe miss from those folklore and myth stories or can't quite extrapolate or make sense of. Talking to people who currently live immersed in that culture is a huge resource.
Especially because a lot of stuff like that got passed down word of mouth as well.
Yeah.
So even things like bedtime stories that you were told as a kid, or like things that get told on specific, you know, days, holidays, what have you, like those stories can still, especially, and again, you mentioned Norse, especially with Norse where the gods have such personality and like that was documented. So right. Like you can kind of like, obviously Thor, you're gonna, you know, enjoy thunder and lightning storms and you're gonna like drink lots of beer and mead and all that. Like it's cheesy, but it's kind of true, you know? Like,
right. But so going with the Thor example, you can also read stories of Thor and extrapolate from that. You know, he was the voice of the Aesir, right? Like he, along with a couple of the other gods, were like, they were basically like the face of the group. You know, Thor was a natural born leader.
He was the party's bard.
But not even that. So like Marvel has definitely twisted some of these characters, right? But like Thor was very much like, he was the rock. He was the groundedness. He was the face of the people. Like even Odin sometimes would look to Thor and be like, you cool with this? You cool? Okay, you're cool. We're cool. Guys, we're cool. We're cool. So being able to take from that, like leadership is going to be important to the worship of Thor, right? And honor and supporting your brethren are going to be important to the worship of Thor. So if you're building a Norse practice based on worshiping and honoring Thor, like you best be at the backs of your community and supporting your friends and loved ones, or else like he's going to be mad at you because you're not living up to his name, you know? And these are all things that you can interpret based on reading stories about him.
So he's the paladin.
Yes, Thor is much more a paladin than a bard.
Yeah, honestly. No, for sure. So another question that I think both of us might have a bit of a hard time answering. Book of Shadows. So that's like this stereotypical like bring me my book.
Like, oh yeah.
Book.
Yes, absolutely. Or like the epic Book of Shadows from Charmed.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s.
Hey, Radia.
What?
You know how I haven't seen anything?
You haven't seen Charmed?
I haven't seen Charmed.
Okay, but can you at least imagine, yeah. Like, all over media? Also, your homework assignment is to go watch Charmed. But, like, all of these, in media, you have all of these different, like, these epic tomes and grimoires and stuff. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't have one. I have, over the years, tried to start some sort of written, collected resource of ideas and concepts and theories. And I always abandon them. But that's probably the ADHD and perfectionism saying, if I don't get this perfectly right the first time, I'm not even going to bother starting it because I'm not going to finish it. But I also don't think that A Book of Shadows is necessary. And I think that you can do it in a bunch of different ways. And it doesn't have to look like the book from Charmed or the book from Practical Magic or the book from Hocus Pocus. It can be a Google Drive. You know, it can be a 3-ring binder with lined paper. It can be notes on your phone. I have used all three of these. I currently, at the same time, use all three of these. because I have different resources in different places that makes the most sense for me in the way I practice. So, when building A Book of Shadows, I think probably the first thing, the first question you want to answer, the most important thing is, what's going to make most sense for the way you practice? You know, if you do a lot of aesthetic stuff and you sit down at an altar every time you cast a spell and it's all very like ritual and ceremonial, then and you're like a crafter or a scrapbooker or something, then absolutely you can put together this big, beautiful Book of Shadows. But I'm always on the move. I'm never in the same place twice. I'm either at home or I'm at work. Or I'm on location, like somebody's asked me to come to them, or I'm teaching a class, or, you know, I'm in the kitchen doing something and then I need to move to the backyard and like I'm chaotic and all over the place. So having something that's very portable, like something I can access on my phone, is my best option. And then I can organize it the way I want and move things around as necessary and like copy in pictures that I've found or pictures that I've taken. And I'm saving paper because I'm not printing a million things a million times every time I find, like, a typo or something.
Right. And witchcraft, there's nothing that says witchcraft has to stay in, like, the 18th century.
Yes!
Like, you can come to the future.
Technology and witchcraft are not antithetical to each other. And, in fact, like, some of my favorite divination methods include streaming music. Like, you can merge technology and modern-day, like, convenience into your witchcraft. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Witchcraft is an evolving practice of the people. It's okay.
See, for me, I've tried to start A Book of Shadows a couple times as well, but what happens to me is I'll start, like, doing this research and a couple different things happen. One is, this is so basic. Why am I writing this down? This is something that I should know already, like the Wheel of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other stuff that it's like, okay, I'm writing this information down, but how do I know if this is a good source? How do I know if this is true? How do I know if this isn't just somebody's personal opinion? And like, I get so discouraged by those things that, just like you, I end up abandoning it and just kind of like fluttering in the wind. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, no, the only thing that I have written down, like, and I still use, is my tarot journal. Because I have a journal that has a page for each card, and mm-hmm. I can write down, like, intuition work on each card. And that's the only thing I still have and still use.
And that's absolutely perfect, because my first suggestion to somebody after, like, figure out what resource works best for you is to, like, just start a magical journal. You know, don't jump right into creating this, like, huge ancestral grimoire that you can pass on to your children and your grandchildren and shit. Like, just start a journal. Start taking notes every time you cast a spell. Start making notes and writing down interesting things that you hear. Reference books that you have, page numbers and stuff. Bullet journals are actually kind of amazing for this. Mm-hmm. Like, the structure of a bullet journal.
Yeah.
I have 3 notebooks in my bag right now. One is, for...
One thing you can count on is Aradia having a journal on them at any time.
Yeah. Journal, book, tarot deck. So one of my journals is more of like a structured, day-to-day, this is what I did, this is, you know, how I built this thing, but I'm sort of like, I'm doing witchy stuff almost every day because it's part of my job. So I'm keeping track of a lot of these things. I have another journal that's a bit more like, what do I want to do? What do I have planned for the future? If I'm writing out like full spells, I'll put it in this bigger book. But then I have another journal that is like true diary form. Like, today I felt a strong call from this ancestor and sat down to pull some tarot cards, and these are the cards I pulled, and this is what I think it means. And so, like, I've got different notebooks for different things, basically. And I think that's okay, you know? And then I have my Materia Medica, which is like an herbal journal, essentially. Have that all on my computer so that I can constantly be adding to those documents and editing things as necessary. If we learn new things about a plant or an herb, I can edit that document instead of having to, like, scratch a whole page and start over, stuff like that. So, like, having a journal, like a magical journal where you can just document your practice, and then having different organizational resources for actual information.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to touch on something you said, too, where you were like, you know, why am I writing this down? It seems so basic. I should know this already, right? First of all, everybody starts somewhere. Second of all, I still forget, like, the correspondences to the days of the week. And that seems like a very basic thing.
Yeah.
I still forget when certain holidays are.
I saw your TikTok like, it's the fall equinox.
Well, so the equinoxes and the solstices are never on the same day because they're astronomical occurrences. So they change like a day or two every year. And they will sneak up on me in a dark alley every single year. And like the fall equinox is one of my favorite days of the year. And I realized 3:30 PM that day that I'm like, oh shit, it's the equinox today. I didn't do anything. Which is okay. You don't have to, mm-hmm. but,
And then when it comes to, so back to Book of Shadows, the reason there was a slight sound interruption, I'm trying to turn this down really quick, because I want to credit the person I'm going to mention. There's a creator on TikTok who does her Book of Shadows as a scrapbook.
Which is super cool.
It is beautiful.
I am so jealous of those people who can do that. And I am not that person.
I'm trying to find her because she's also just hilarious. I like her a lot. And we're going to do episodes on like our favorite witchy creators and stuff.
Yeah. And we can absolutely put any of the resources that we go over, any of the authors, TikTok accounts, Instagram, anything like that, we'll put in the show notes too.
Yeah.
So people can find all this stuff.
Because she's hilarious and... like, I love watching her content, and her book is beautiful. Oh, there she is. Jessie Streak. And we'll put that in the show notes so you can find her. But she's hilarious, and her spell book is beautiful.
I'll have to go find her. I don't actually watch Witch Talk. It's awful. I have a lot of people on Witch Talk Radio. I have a lot of people who watch me on TikTok. Shout out to everybody who's watching me on TikTok that's how they found this podcast. Witch Talk does not come up in my For You feed. And I try. I'll search out like common hashtags and I will watch a few videos and I'll have to put my phone down and walk away. Because there's a lot of good information on the internet and there is a lot more bad information on the internet. So just keep that in mind.
She reminds me of you in some ways where she's like, no, go look stuff up.
Yes.
Like okay, not everything is going to be. And she does like super relatable stuff too. Like she did one like, oh yeah, I can do a protection spell. Nothing bad's going to happen. And then next you look, it blew up and she's like, what the hell? So like it's, I like her a lot.
No, anyways. That's awesome. Research is your best friend as a witch. I know it sounds lame and mundane, but it really is. So that's how you start a Book of Shadows. Moving on.
correspondences. Days of the week. You mentioned that.
I did.
Do they actually matter that much?
So if it's going to prevent you from actually practicing, no, they don't matter. A big issue that I run into is astrological correspondences. People are like, oh, the moon is in Libra, so I can't cast a love spell because it won't work right or something. Like, correspondences are there for you to bolster your spells in your work. You're laughing at me.
No, I'm laughing at this... All I can think about right now, we're starting this podcast in Mercury Haterade.
We are. It is Mercury Retrograde right now. And you know what? I don't care.
So sorry. That's what I was laughing because I'm laughing at how funny I am in my own head.
But so, okay. So correspondences, they're there to bolster your spell, right? Using certain colors, using certain scents, using certain days of the week and astrological occurrences will help add energy to your spell. But at the end of the day, if you're not fueling the spell, then it's just going to kind of fizzle and go pop, right? So correspondences are important up until they start to become a hindrance. When they're a hindrance, if you are waiting to cast a spell because you're waiting for the perfect timing, or if, God forbid, you have like a job interview tomorrow, but the best time to cast a job-related spell is in 2 weeks from now, cast the spell now. Like, don't wait, because your energy and your intention and your desire to see the outcome of that spell is going to be more important than waiting for a Tuesday at 2 p.m.
See, one of the things that I find, too, is correspondences are one of the easiest parts to customize a pre-written spell.
Yeah.
Because those correspondences have more to do with what you attribute to that tool, scent, item, whatever, than what's written down in a book. Even if it's a good source, what you attribute is better and stronger than what's written on a piece of paper.
Absolutely.
So, like, they, yes, they can matter, but you can make them matter yourself.
Like, I tell people this with colors all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Color correspondence, color magic is huge. It's easy. It's simple. You want a boost of power for your day, put on a red shirt, right? Like, it's, unless you're in Star Trek, it's the easiest way to infuse your day with magic. But when it comes to colors, like, people have different associations with different colors.
What color is math?
What color is math?
What color is math?
What color folder is math?
Yes.
Math is blue.
Mm,
math is blue, science is green, and
see, I usually swapped those.
No, math. Science is the study of Earth and the natural world, and Earth is green.
But ocean blue.
But Earth is green.
So, like, things like that. Correspondences. Different people can have different correspondences to different things.
My favorite example is yellow is often associated with happiness, but maybe you absolutely hate the color yellow and you have really fond memories of your grandmother and her favorite color was blue. So blue might be your color of happiness because that's the emotion that it evokes in you when you see it. And that's where the magic comes from, that feeling, that energy that gets raised within us when we're looking at these colors or, you know, what have you. So especially with stuff like color magic, like it's very personalized and it's very specific to the practitioner.
And cultural too. Because cultural, like, too. You think like Chinese weddings, horrible luck to wear white. Red. Red is the luck color for Chinese weddings.
Right. Because in a lot of Eastern culture, white is the color of death.
Exactly.
Not black like in Western culture. So it's very cultural. It's very specific to the person. So correspondences matter when they help you. They don't matter when they hinder you.
So going back to the whole equinoxes and all of that, is there a best time to start your practice? Whether it's like a time of the month, time of the year, that you know, is there a good time? I know like Wiccans do their year in a day study and stuff like that.
Right.
But what do you think?
That's going to be very dependent upon the practitioner. If there is a day that is sacred to you and you want to start your official dedicated practice on a sacred day to you because that day holds a lot of energy and you feel like it's really going to bolster your practice, then absolutely. You can absolutely time it that way. It's also practice dependent. So, like, certain traditions will say, we start training on this day, whether it's, you know, Yule or Imbolc or Samhain or whatever. You start training on a certain day and you go through that whole year of the day, year in a day training time period before you, like, fully get initiated into a tradition. But that's all very Wicca. In general, I don't really think there's a best time to start, mostly because I think, like, a lot of people's foray into witchcraft is very gradual. Like, a lot of times you start with sort of gateway practices that sort of you...
Tarot!
Exactly, tarot. Or, like, crystals are so freaking popular everywhere.
Oh,
right,
I know,
now, right?
Especially right now.
Yeah. Crystal magic is absolutely a gateway drug into witchcraft.
Hey, yo, you got that Moldavite?
So I think, like, the fact that, you know, you pick up a couple crystals, and then while you're at the crystal store, they sell tarot decks, and you're like, oh, well, you know, I've heard a lot about that tarot, I'll grab a tarot deck. And then you start, you know, burning some incense, some mugwort, or some rosemary while you're reading your tarot cards, and all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, I'm a fucking witch, when did that happen? So, like, there isn't necessarily a best time to start, because a lot of it is very gradual, and you're sort of working your way into it. And a lot of people will do a lot of reading and research before they even do anything. And that's another good point too. Like, what do you consider starting your practice? Like, where does that flag come up? Is it when you cast your first spell? When you buy your first witchcraft book? When you attend your first sabbat ritual? Like, what do you consider starting it?
I mean, honestly, and I've heard you say this a lot, is it's just when you decide that you are.
Yeah. I think it's as simple as, hey, I feel witchy. I like the things that witches do. I want to do those things too. Now I'm a witch. And it's just as simple as that.
So, things that witches do. Another question that we got was, is it wrong to get into witchcraft specifically for, like, the spirituality of deity work? But you can even kind of expand that question into, is it wrong to get into witchcraft for just a singular portion of witchcraft?
That, I think, is a really good question, because a lot of, there's a lot of misconception about, nowadays, feels like everybody is doing deity work, which isn't a bad thing, right? You know, having religion and having purpose in your life is not a bad thing. But witchcraft itself is not a religion. Witchcraft is a practice. It is a set of skills. It's a thing that you do. It's a craft, right? Whereas it pairs really well with religion, like Wicca, like various paganisms, even, you know, Christianity. And you can have, like, Jewish mysticism and Jewish witches and stuff like that. Witchcraft pairs very well with these beliefs. Now, you can absolutely use witchcraft as a gateway for deity work. As long as you understand that witchcraft and the practice of worshiping a deity go hand in hand, but aren't necessarily the same thing.
Right.
Because you can have, just as easily as you can have Christian witches and pagan witches and Jewish witches, you can have atheist witches. So I don't think it's wrong to do it. Absolutely not. And witchcraft gives you a lot of really interesting and unique tools to work with deity and work with spirit in general. So I don't think it's wrong, but I also don't think it's necessary.
Well, and one of the things too is witchcraft is such a personal practice. It can really be whatever you want it to be. So if you want your witchcraft to be just about, you know, serving your deity and communicating mm-hmm. with your deity and things like that, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. A lot of what we're going to talk about is the fact that you personalize your craft to you.
Oh, yeah.
So,
like, I definitely think that there are a couple things that are intrinsic to witchcraft. And if you don't do those things, then you're not practicing witchcraft. But at the same time, within the practice of witchcraft, there are so many different things that you can, you know, pick and choose to build your practice within reason, as long as you're not appropriating anything and you're not, you know, harming yourself or harming other people. You can really build a practice that's unique and personal to you, which is, you know, our entire plan for this podcast. And,
right.
you know, basically my life's work is making sure people understand that they don't have to stick by a certain set of rules, as long as you're being responsible and thinking critically, and doing what feels right to you and not harming anybody, you can really build a practice that fits what you need it to do. And that's kind of like the glory of witchcraft,
right?
Is that it can be very moldable. So if you get into witchcraft for the spirituality of deity and spirit work, that's okay.
And I do know that we have a full episode planned on deity work.
Yeah.
At some point. So stay tuned, because that is coming. A lot of these questions, especially ones kind of on the back burner, not back burner, but like at the end of the list, are going to have full episodes later as well. So yeah, I'm excited for those. But deity work is absolutely going to be one of them.
Absolutely.
The list of questions is dwindling.
What else did we want to make sure to
I know cover? There were some questions about, like, crystals and energy work that, again, we're going to be doing, like, full episodes on, like, how to charge crystals and how to things of that nature. So those are going to be full episodes.
Yeah. Well, how to charge your crystal. You don't have to. Episode over.
Right. Yeah.
No, really. Stick around for that one, because I have a lot of things to say about it.
Another thing that you can pretty much guarantee that Aradia has on them at any time is a pocket full of rocks.
Yes, actually. I don't currently have a pocket full of rocks right now. You have to call me out. I am wearing my yoga pants.
No,
which don't have pockets. But yes, on tomorrow I'll have a pocket full of rocks. I have lots of thoughts on rocks and pockets full of rocks.
The other day, my roommate was headed to their first day of work and was very nervous. So I literally went over and I pick up Pretty Rock. I walk over, I put Pretty Rock in hand, and I go, "Here, this will make you feel better."
And did it make them feel better?
Yeah, I believe so. He's not listening right now. Okay, so
Pretty Rocks make everybody feel better.
Exactly.
Moving on.
Another question that we got that I think it kind of stopped me in my tracks a little bit.
Okay.
Does witchcraft have a new age problem?
Oh boy, we're going to get haters in the first episode. All right. So
first let's clarify, because I know you asked the poster, what exactly is a new age problem?
Yeah, I was pretty confident that I knew exactly what she was getting at, but I just wanted to clarify. So when we talk about new age practices, new age spirituality is very much sort of like what's trending right now with spirituality. Like using crystals to enhance certain areas of your life is very new age. Moon circles. Oh my God. Women's circles on like full moons and stuff is so new age. And I'm not using this term to say any of this is bad because I have pockets full of rocks, right? So none of this is bad, but like a lot of it is very trendy. And I think that's what the questioner was getting at. Does witchcraft not so much have a new age problem, but does witchcraft have a trendy problem?
Kind of going back to like me in high school thinking it's cool and the aesthetic is awesome.
Right.
And, you know, it helps that I've come into this path as an adult now, but like it's kind of, I feel like I get that kind of feel.
Yeah.
From this question, you know what I mean?
So, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, where there is a difference between witchcraft and a lot of the practices that we're going to talk about that go along with witchcraft, like reading tarot and using crystals and using herbs. It's all sort of witchcraft adjacent, right? So you can read tarot and you can be a witch, or you can read tarot and you can not be a witch.
We have a friend that does that.
Exactly. This friend is coming to the Samhain Circle later this month and is starting to get into it because stuff like reading tarot is very much a gateway drug. But it's not the same thing. Like witchcraft and reading tarot, for example, to keep with that example, developed very much independent of each other and only in the past, like maybe 50 years, have become very entwined. And there's a lot of... There's a lot of trouble with witchcraft and social media right now. So on a very basic level, like you have these amazingly beautiful to look at Instagram accounts, right? That are staged and curated and so cool, but that's not necessarily the reality of witchcraft. Like if you have a clean and beautiful looking witchcraft practice 24/7, my hat is tipped to you, good sir or madam, because my witchcraft looks very messy and chaotic. If you were to Instagram my practice, nobody would want to look at that feed. And I think a lot of people are getting into witchcraft thinking that it's very much the former. It's very much the insta-witch, you know, it's going to, my life is going to be all light and beauty and perfection because this is what I see these Instagram witches doing or these TikTok witches doing. And you get into it and that's not what it does. It's definitely a tool to help you get to that point if that's what you want to do. But it's not like it's not a fix-all or a cure-all.
I do feel like some of these curated things contribute to a sense of imposter syndrome too when people are starting to, because it's again for people like you and I where we're like the perfectionist ADHD, like it almost discourages you from starting because like I look at my altar right now and I'm like, that's not anywhere near like some of the stuff that you see online. And you know, you're especially anybody raised in a certain religion that likes guilt a whole lot. It's like, it's not good enough. Yeah. It's not good enough. So, like,
yeah. Like, absolutely. No, you are absolutely hitting a nail on the head there, where, like, you look at these feeds and you're like, well, my witchcraft doesn't look like that, so they must be a better witch than me. And no, please don't think that, because it's got nothing to do with the way it looks and everything to do with the power behind your magic, mm-hmm. you know? I think another issue with this new age problem and talking about social media with witchcraft specifically is that anybody can post anything on social media, right? So there is a lot of misinformation that goes and runs rampant through, unfortunately, places like TikTok, especially. The reason I started making TikToks and got on TikTok in the first place was because I was watching a bunch and going, all of this is wrong. Why are you people saying this? Well, you're going to get somebody hurt or worse. Like,
it started with your shop getting 5 million calls a day about Moldavite.
Yes.
And you were like, why is Moldavite so crazy right now?
That's another
story. And I was like, it's all over TikTok.
That's another story for another day. The reason I started making TikTok videos was because I wanted people, I don't even want people to necessarily buy what I'm saying 100%. I want to encourage people to think critically about the content that they're taking in. You know, and that's a big problem with social media right now, not just with witchcraft, like everywhere. Like, people don't open articles. They just read the title of the article and then they share it. Yeah. Clickbait witchcraft. And like, I feel like people have forgotten how to vet resources. And that's a huge thing, because like, you don't know where this content is coming from. And like, things do have power, and if you're using things in the wrong context, you're not going to be getting the right results, and you're going to think there's something wrong with you, but it's not. It's because your resources are bad. At best, they're just misunderstood, and at worst, they're deliberately misleading. You know, like, there was a TikTok I saw where somebody was showing people how to make a curse jar, and it was like, add, you know, bleach and this and that, and then top it off with like urine to seal the spell. And I was like, oh my god, don't do that. If you, that's how you create toxic fumes and kill yourself. I was gonna say,
guess what's in urine? Ammonia. Guess what ammonia mixed with bleach does? Chloroform.
Like, and that's a lot of the stuff
you're cursing yourself there.
Yeah. Like, that's a lot of the stuff that you find on social media. And it's really hard. Like, people have lost the ability almost to wade through the good content from the bullshit. And I think in that sense, witchcraft absolutely has a new age problem and has a trendy problem and has a social media problem, because people just go, oh, I want a completely benign example. Carnelian was super popular on TikTok for a while, and we completely sold out of it at my store. And people were like, oh, I'm coming in for Carnelian because I saw this TikTok that, like, this woman had carnelian and she had all these men falling all over her and throwing themselves at her. And I'm like, honey, that's not what carnelian is for. Carnelian will absolutely increase your confidence, but it's not going to, like, pull suitors from nowhere.
Right.
And so, like, on a more benign end of the scale, like, you're wasting money. And money is important to people's livelihood. And if you're convincing all of these people that they need these stones or these tools or they need to do things a certain way, and then they go and do these things and nothing happens, they're wasting their time, they're wasting their money. And it's just, it's irresponsible to be putting content like that out there. Even if you're not causing physical harm to somebody, like, maybe they spent their last $10 on a carnelian stone because they told them that it would help them meet the love of their life, and now they can't have dinner tonight, and they're not going to meet the love of their life. Like, there's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed in terms of witchcraft and new age trend and social media. And that's not even talking about, like, toxic positivity mm-hmm. and gatekeeping. And oh my god, we can make an entire episode about whether witchcraft has a new age problem, because the more I talk about this, the more I'm realizing that there's a lot of different aspects to that question.
I know we have an episode, not even just like who do we follow and who do we watch, but we have an episode on like witch talk specifically coming up, so we can kind of talk about that at the same time too. But like, again, like the cost of it, going back to Moldavite. That is not a cheap stone.
No. Like, tiny ass fucking, it's molten glass.
Yeah.
It's glass. It is a rock. It's not a crystal. It's glass. And it costs $100 for a piece that's the size of your thumb. Like, your thumbnail, I'm sorry. And that's on a good day. Like, use that money to pay your rent. There are better stones than Moldavite that you can find. But social media tells you that that's the stone you need, so that's the stone you have to go buy. Like,
ugh. So yeah, rewind a little bit. I want to touch on something. I know you said it, so it feels like people forgot how to research good sources.
Yeah.
I went to public school. I grew up in a not-so-good city. The only sourcing I was ever taught about was from an encyclopedia in a library, and they don't have those for witchcraft. So I will make that argument, though. It's a lot of people haven't been taught how to find good sources beyond what you need to write an MLA paper or whatever.
Right. All right, so I'm going to give you my favorite tip right now, and then we'll have a whole other episode about it. If you are getting information from a website, scroll down to the bottom of that website, especially if it's like a news website or something and not like somebody's personal book of shadows online or something. Scroll down to the bottom of that website and click the about link in the very bottom menu and like just keep clicking links to find out who really owns that website. Who is responsible for putting content on that website? Mm-hmm. It's something I learned when looking for verifiable sources for doing research papers and stuff to know whether or not the information that's coming at you is biased. Because you can eventually get back far enough to know who owns that website. Like, the website may be a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary of Fox News.
Right.
You know? And you don't necessarily know that looking at the page itself, but you can do a little digging and figure it out. And then you know, okay, this information might swing a little conservative because it's coming from Fox News.
I feel like a lot of it, too, especially with books, like, almost anybody can get a book published at this point in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So, like, you stand at that book section in Barnes & Noble or whatever, because that's where most people are going to go. And you see an author's name, and it's like, okay, like, how do I know who this person is? How do I know if they're, you know, they've been in the field for X amount of years or whatever? So, Humble Bundle I sent this to you, that big, massive collection of witchcraft books right now and Wicca books. And I had to send it to you and be like, what's up? And you were like, hey, some of my favorite authors are on that.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. So this probably is a good thing to get. But like, you go, I had an issue with this when I was getting into runes. And
I found that book
and I got so angry because it was not a credible source at all. And this guy kind of, I felt like I got taken for a ride because I didn't notice it until halfway through the book.
Yeah.
And like my brain holds on to information. So now I have all this information in my head that I have to remember isn't correct.
Right. Like, yeah.
And all these associations that were made. And like, so yeah, it's one of those things like, okay, yeah, we get a name, but like, how do we know who the hell that person is?
I don't know if this is still a pervasive problem, but there was a problem for a while where you can self-publish ebooks on Amazon, right?
Oh, yeah, you still can.
I know you can still do that, but there was a problem where there were witchcraft specifically books being published like multiple books a month from the same author or multiple books on the same topic a month from different authors. And it was all the same rehashed information. It was just worded differently. And they were just putting it out in as many skins as possible to make money. And it wasn't necessarily bad information, but it wasn't very good information. It wasn't very in-depth information. So you really need to be careful everywhere about the resources. Like and your example with that rune book is perfect because if it makes you feel uncomfortable reading it, if something just makes you feel off about it, it doesn't matter who the author is. It could be a nobody. It could be one of my favorites. If I feel off reading the content that they're putting out, I'm not using it and I'm probably not going to finish the book.
Right.
Because your gut is more important than anything and your intuition is going to tell you when something is off.
So what flagged me is it's a book about the Norse Futhark runes and they started mentioning Christian saints. And I was like, hut up.
So, but see, that's a very unique problem in the sense that
in heaven pretty and much like everything start, that we have,
all of the information that we have about, you know, the Viking era, air quotes, comes from Christian writers. So it's sometimes it's really hard to like separate those two things, like separate the bias of the author from the content itself. Yeah. Which is another whole different issue.
And I don't want to get into this too much because we like I said, it's going to be a fairly, it's coming up soon.
Yeah.
The episode on how to do research, because that's one of the things we wanted to touch on really early.
So why don't we hit one more question, because we're coming up on time. What's your ultimate step one to start practicing?
So I really like this question because this is the step that I definitely missed.
Okay.
Like, I feel very much like the phrase that I've been using is floating in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is going to be your answer, but it's learning your energy.
Yeah.
And learning how to, like, not only just manipulate your energy, but get familiar with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, now that I'm actually starting, like, after all this time, starting to try and tap into that and do that, it has such huge effect, like uncomfortably so. Like you feel mm-hmm. overstimulated or drained or what have you. Mm-hmm. And it's like I'm trying to do, because, you know, at this point I've been doing research for a while. It's like, okay, I want to try the other things, but I really do, I do have to go back to my basics and learn that first, because it's been a roller coaster.
The thing with energy work, like everybody always overlooks it. But learning how to identify, manipulate, raise, cleanse energy is literally the foundation for any other thing you're going to do as a witch. Anything. I challenge somebody to give me a practice that doesn't involve identifying or manipulating energy in some way. And it's not even, like, restricted to just witchcraft. Like, Christians need to know how to work with their energy because that's what prayer work is. Like, energy work is so incredibly important. And my ultimate step one is definitely when you start to research, like start reading and researching first. That's your step one, right? But what you need to start reading and researching first is definitely how to notice your energy field, how to work with your energy field, how to start identifying the energy fields of other things. Like when I teach Reiki, this is our step one. Before I even talk about what Reiki is, we're talking about energy. We're taking a field trip upstairs to the shop so that people can like hold stones and touch plants and stuff like that. Because all of these things that are like natural resources of the earth have energy in them. Everything has spirit. Everything has energy. And being able to sense it and raise it and direct it is what spellcraft is. You know, you can like say some pretty words and like light a flower on fire, and it's not going to do anything unless you're fueling the spell with energy. That's what gets the result at the end. That's what gets you your goal. Using the words and using the fire and using the herbs just sort of help bolster your energy. But your energy is what's making the difference when you're casting. And it's so incredibly important. You can't cast a spell if you can't fuel it.
Right.
You know? And then learning how to ground and shield and cleanse your energy and the energy of your space is absolutely integral to all of this work. So learn your energy, learn how to sense your energy, learn how to manipulate and raise and ground your energy before you do anything else.
And yeah, so that is why it's going to be another full episode, again, fairly soon. So with that, we are running on time. So
thank you so much if you've listened to this.
Our rambling.
Our ranting and rambling. We have lots of thoughts on lots of things.
And we are super excited to continue bringing them to you.
Absolutely.
And in that vein, we would absolutely love it if you could share 2x Torchlight with your friends, with people that you might be interested in, share it on your social medias. It would be a huge help to us, anybody that you think might be interested. Even if they're not practicing witches or anything like that, just anybody that would like to listen to us ramble like I do.
yeah, and, you know, make sure you leave us a review on any streaming platform that you happen to be listening to us on. It really helps visibility, you know, and feeding that algorithm and getting the podcast out there for more people, because we really want to be able to help people and, you know, help them feel comfortable in their skin and not any of that imposter syndrome or feeling like they have to do things a certain way. I think if there's one thing that people could walk away from this podcast understanding is that it doesn't have to be a certain way and you don't have to follow a strict set of rules. There are very few rules in witchcraft.
Right. And if your platform of choice doesn't support reviews, Podchaser and iTunes are the most popular. If you would like to support us in that way, you absolutely don't have to. But if you're looking for a way to, that is where you can.
We would super love you forever and send you all the good juju.
And if you want to interact with us or get between episode little, information nuggets, or if we ever have to reach out for questions again or things like that, you can follow us on our many, many social media accounts, 2xTorchlight everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. YouTube, everywhere. We also have a website. You can find us places. We were prepared.
We also had a bunch more questions that were submitted to us that we didn't have time to get to in this episode. So we'll be using those as social media fodder as well. So if we didn't get to your specific question, make sure to follow at least one of those social media accounts because we will be addressing them. And like we mentioned throughout the episode, a lot of these are going to become full episodes in the future too. So,
and speaking of full episodes, our next episode is going to air on October 14th. We are going to be uploading every 2 weeks. So yeah, keep an eye out for us there and give us a follow so you can be notified when that happens.
Yeah.
Hi friends, Editing Liz here. I realize now that I said our next episode is airing on October 14th, when in reality what I meant was November 14th. We're still going to be doing episodes every 2 weeks, but I just wanted to make sure that I corrected that here. Thank you so much, and we'll see you then.
Thank you so much for listening and for supporting the creation of this podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at www.2bytorchlight.com, along with episode archives, contact info, our press kit, and more. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks for another episode.